Welcome to China Manufacturing Decoded from Sofeast, the podcast where we take you through some of the major topics facing importers and manufacturers in China today.
Hello, listener. Welcome along to episode 24 of the podcast. And today you'll be hearing from us about compliance testing. This important tool helps you to assure the safety of the products that you're bringing into your markets. So we'll be answering the questions. What are the types of compliance testing that you might find? What are the best practices when it comes to performing these tests? What sort of labs can you work with? And what sort of information are they going to need from you in order to start working on your tests? What is the difference between being certified to a standard and just testing to a standard? And a whole lot more besides. Let's hear what Renaud's got to say on the topic.
Hello, Renaud.
Hey there. Hi, Adrian.
So today we're going to go into the ins and outs of compliance testing in quite some detail. We've spoken a lot about reliability testing recently and created a lot of content actually on sofeast.com. But I want to talk more about the compliance thing this time. So if we're thinking about product testing and also quality inspections, maybe it's best to start off by just explaining what we mean by a product test.
Yeah, so a test is basically you have a way to evaluate, you know, whether a product, you know, is usually samples from production or maybe a pre-production run or prototypes. Anyway, a product, usually a few of them, you know, 5, 7, 10 of them usually. You have this product, and you're going to evaluate whether they conform to, you know, a certain expectation. Let's say it this way. So in our world, there's two big families of tests that are often done in laboratories: is compliance test and reliability test. And by the way, I should say, can be done in it anywhere. A lot of them are done in the factories. A lot of them are done in external labs, okay, that are specialized in that kind of testing. Some of them are done by the buyers themselves. I mean, if you think about it, for example, in textile, a lot of buyers have a washing machine with a certain brand of detergent, and that's their standard. You know, I put it there, I do 3 cycles, and then I compare the color before and after, and I see if there was a color bleeding, you know, if there's color fastness after washing with this test. You know, it's a relatively simple test. Actually, anybody can do it at home, right? Mm. And on the other hand, you have when you have, for example, you know, very large and expensive pressure vessels, and you do X-ray tests, and everybody in the area has to be away, so usually they do it maybe at night, that there has to be nobody around. And you know, these are two very and usually that kind of test is done in the factory, because these huge pressure vessels, you cannot ship them to a lab just to do the testing, right? So these are two opposites of tests to check that it complies with a certain standard. And there's reliability tests, which we can talk about in another podcast maybe, but it's more about, hey, if the product is used for that much time or that many, you know, cycles of use in this specific environment and this specific way and so on, is it going to survive? You know, is it going to keep functioning as expected, and is it going to still be, you know, considered fit and pleasing to the user, you know, not completely run down. So these are the two large families of tests. And I think in this podcast, we should really narrow it down to compliance testing. All right. So, and some tests are done by inspectors, you know, they're just a very simple test. Is, for example, the free fall cotton drop test. You know, the inspectors go in the factory and some cottons are full and fully packed, And then they check, for example, there's an international standard, the ISTA 1A, also 2A. Okay, there's different kinds of tests. Japan has all the test standards and so on. And then you depending on the weight of the cotton, you drop it from a certain height. Okay, and then you open it up and you see, there's a sequence. You need to drop it in a certain way. Then you open it, you see if anything was damaged inside, the products are still okay, still functioning, and so on. That's a very low tech sort of test. You just need a, something like a concrete floor and someone to drop and to lift and drop. That's it. So I could go on and on with all kinds of tests, but I should say that when it comes to compliance testing, a lot of these tests are dictated by the consumer safety regulations in the EU, in USA and Canada, in Australia, New Zealand, in Japan, and so on and so forth. And that's very, very product specific. You have products used by children and babies, you have products with low voltage, with high voltage, you have products that are supposed to be used in very specific conditions, product that you put on your skin, cosmetics typically, products that that you eat, you're supposed to ingest, so you have food safety regulations and so on, right? So a lot of this testing is driven by these country specific and, let's say, widely product specific regulations.
Okay, when we talk about product certification, can you expand on what that is exactly a little bit as well?
Okay, first, not all tests lead to a certification, far from that. You can take some products and send them to a testing laboratory, whether it is Intertek, Bureau Veritas, UL, and others. And there's so many of them. And there's a lot of local ones, especially in China. So you can send any, sample to them and say, test it this way according to this standard. They will do it and they will give you the findings, and that's just called a test report, right? Mm. And a test report just means that the samples that were tested, passed or failed based on the test that they ran, that the findings that they had and the standard that they had to follow, right? That's all it is. So if you have a supplier that says, hey, look, we have, you're buying this product from me, it's safe, look, I have this report, sometimes it's a certificate. Then you open it, you say, whoa, it's from Bureau Veritas. Oh, they have a beautiful logo. Oh, okay, it looks very legitimate. Oh, they tested it to that international standard. Oh, okay. Well, that in itself is nothing, okay? It's better, it's a little bit better than nothing. At least if something goes wrong and that test is really related to the kind of, that report, sorry, it's really related to the kind of testing that was supposed to detect whether there was a risk that things went wrong the way it went wrong, and you have this paper, then at least they cannot say you were negligent, oh, look, no, I really tried to address that, they gave me this. But it's a very small step above nothing, okay? Because you don't know, very often we have these test reports in hand and we look at the product that the buyer is actually going to buy, and it's a different product, it's a different model. Mm. Okay. So and we as a factory, but why do you give this to the client? I mean, it's just not even related to the product they're buying. Then the supplier will say, yeah, but it's the same, it's the same kind of components, it's the same risk, same, okay. And some of the reports are old, right? Like 3 years, 5 years old. And I say, hey, you don't have anything more current? I mean, come on, this is really not serious, okay? And sometimes it's the same model, right? But still, you know, is it still made with the same component from the same suppliers that use themselves use the same materials and the same processes and so on? You know, are you sure? You know, so you're basically trying to take a test report that was made on a previous batch, right, in the past, and trying to see if that can be used to infer anything about the batch that you're about to buy. Well, let me break the news, it really doesn't bring much confidence at all. And sometimes the applicant name, you know, it's given to a company that's not even the supplier, right? Okay, actually quite often, I don't even know why. I mean, maybe they just pass it to each other, I don't know. Well, sometimes they give it in JPEG also. Like, come on, no testing laboratory gives you a PNG or JPEG or, you know, this kind of image file. I'm sorry. If they give a soft copy, it's going to be PDF, right? So at least if you do some Photoshop and then you turn it again in PDF, there's a way that the client might, you know, feel very confident. But if you give a JPEG, I mean, come on, this is very, you know, this is the sign of a very unsophisticated supplier. And actually it's more scary that way, because if they are so unsophisticated, even when they cheat, you know, they might be unsophisticated also about, you know, actually making safe products, right?
Sure.
So that's test reports, right? So if you buy an off-the-shelf product, a desk, right? And you want to check, you know, there are regulations. Let's say you buy that for the UK, and you still have to apply, you know, the EU directives there, and some standards apply. And during the course of making that batch, they have actually, maybe they have their own internal lab, or maybe they send it to Intertek, let's say. And Intertek does the testing and comes out with, hey, you know, here's the report. So you see on the date, you know, hey, yeah, that's when they were producing for me. You know, okay, that's a higher chance that it really belongs to me. But still, is it going to be exactly the product that they were making for you? Or did it just make 3 pieces for the lab or 5 pieces that were, you know, in a different material, right? Now that's really tricky, because it's not that difficult for a manufacturer of furniture to have different materials, for example, right? So as long as the supplier is the one that provides the test report, there's a risk for the buyer. That's really the bottom line here. Again, remember, if you're the importer, you are responsible for what you put on your market. So you can't really, you know, it might be very hard for you to sue the Chinese manufacturer, especially if you don't have the right kind of contract that we were discussing, you know, 1 or 2 episodes ago. So in the end, if you trust them, it's really, you're putting your company's risk in the supplier's hands, really. That's what you're doing, right? So test reports, be very careful. If you want to cross all the T's, dot all the I's, you have to have your own representative. Can be an inspector that you send, can be your staff. Go to the factory, pick some samples from the production that they're making for you, and have them tested, either in the internal laboratory of the factory, especially if it's a big factory, that might be possible, and that's okay, you know, or send it to an external testing lab, right? So that's the test report. Again, it's just a document that lists the findings that, you know, that the lab found, right? I mean, that the lab got by following a certain standard. That's really all it is. The certification is a little bit more serious, okay? A lot of certifications are product specific, and, you know, usually they're done toward the end of the development of a new product. The factory might, you know, send some samples to a lab, and the lab does the testing just like, you know, they would do for a test report, but then, you know, they provide a certification. The process is usually a little bit, how to say, a little bit more complicated. They have more oversight and so on. Okay. But in the end, that it's really sort of the same process that leads to a document that is actually a certification, you know, to a certain standard. Again, if it's not the right samples that are sent, it really has nothing to do with your product, right? So same caveat here. Some certifications, such as, for example, the UL certification, if you buy a product with batteries, you're going to set it in North America. You want really to show that you're very serious, you apply for UL certification. It will also look at the process, the manufacturing process and the systems in the factory. So it's certifications sometimes are more, much more intrusive, much harder to get, let's say, right? But some companies just say, hey, we don't really want to do the full UL certification, but we just want to test the products up to the UL standard. And then in their marketing, they can say, hey, we are, you know, it was tested and passed to UL standards, right? It's not exactly the same thing. It's not the same thing. Mm.
Right. But it kind of indemnifies them in a sense that by doing so, they're pretty sure that the product's going to be safe.
It is a good thing, of course. And ideally, they would do it with every batch, every production run. Mm. That's because otherwise you do it on the first run, you know, and then you say, okay, we're going to do it annually. And if you don't purchase large volumes, you know, it might not be feasible economically to do it for every batch. But if you say, okay, you know, next year, and the factory knows they're off the hook, well, who knows, you know, who knows if the third batch would pass the same testing, right? Because it can really be quite tempting for them to make more margin by cheapening the product. And if they know that they're not going to be tested, or the product's not going to be tested, it's quite tempting, right? Yeah. So it's good to have a random sort of testing regime if testing every batch is not feasible. Maybe you don't test the full standard, you test just a part of the standard and you sort of rotate that from batch to batch. Maybe you request that the factory in their internal lab give you their own testing. You know, there's a lot of ways that this can be done, but doing nothing and letting the factory know about that can be a little bit dangerous. Mm-hmm.
You've mentioned a number of, you know, dangerous circumstances and also what we can only describe as dodgy business practices coming from certain suppliers, whether they're in China or elsewhere. And that makes me wonder, is it actually safe to use a Chinese testing lab or would it be more reliable to use one that's foreign?
So it's a little bit loaded. I need to be careful what I say, but
sure, of course.
A lot of buyers still request testing in Hong Kong, even when they work with one of the big multinational testing houses, you know, from Eurofins to Intertek, from Bureau Veritas to Tuver Inland and so on, because they don't even trust these organizations' ability to regulate exactly what happens in their offices in the mainland. So that gives you an idea. So that's why there's still a lot of testing activity in Hong Kong, but you know, testing labs require a lot of space and Hong Kong real estate is very expensive. I mean, it doesn't really make sense, but there's still a lot of testing activity here in Hong Kong. Okay, so the main difference is not really, you know, where it's tested, because again, the big international testing houses have labs, you know, pretty much everywhere, you know, in South China, in North China, and so on.
Sure.
It's more, do you want to do it with an internationally recognized testing house that is, you know, headquartered in Cologne, Germany, right? Or do you want to do that with a testing house in China that might have just one testing facility, that might have five testing facilities, but that doesn't have a brand name that people recognize, and that might be cheaper, but you know, you don't really know if their internal controls are as strong as they should be, right? And that I will leave that up to all the buyers out there who listen to us. Everybody will have their own tolerance to this kind of risk, let's say, or their appraisal of the risk. One thing at least that you need to double check is whether they are certified to ISO 17025, and you need to ask for their scope of certification, because I don't know any lab that is certified for all kinds of tests. So it always comes with a scope. So, you know, let's say you want them to test for FCC, let's say. Okay, it's a product with Bluetooth or Wi-Fi, and you're gonna sell it in North America. You wanted to make sure it's FCC compliant. You can have a lot of labs do that. However, if the scope of their ISO 17025 certificate does not include anything on electronics and does not include specifically that test, well, do not give them the job, because there's nothing, there's zero oversight over their methods for doing that. You know, they even have the right equipment? Are they going to do it themselves? Where are they going to farm it out? I mean, you really have zero idea. And if things go wrong and you have to explain to a court of justice, you know, what happened and why you gave it to that lab, well, their expert will look at the scope of the testing lab and will say, well, you give it to a lab that's not even accredited. I mean, you don't know what you're doing, right? You didn't, you really did not take any precautions. So that's one thing, that's the basics, let's say, right? Then you can search, for example, there's a list of CPSIA approved testing labs. If that's, you know, if you want to do something that's that falls under that kind of things, on CPSC.gov, for example, you can see a number of different testing labs, okay, for a lot of consumer goods, right? Same thing for FCC, actually. If you apps.fcc.gov, you can search and you can see which labs, and there's a lot of Chinese labs there, right? So and some of them are good, they're really doing the tests. You know, if it's bad, they really fail it. And then, well, you know, you and I have heard stories of labs that call the manufacturers, because the manufacturers are a big customer, you know, for the labs. They want to get it tested, they want to get the reports and the certificates to provide confidence to their buyers. And some of the labs, you know, the salespeople say, yeah, no problem. You know, as long as you pay, it's passed. You know, yeah, we do the testing, but you know, whatever, you know, you pay that, I guarantee you get a passed test report. It's no problem, right? And yes, they are ISO 17025, you know, certified and things like that. So these kind of things exist. We've heard stories of salespeople in the big international testing houses also doing that in China. And I'm not saying it did not happen in Hong Kong or in the USA, right? I mean, this might have happened everywhere. Okay.
Surely. Yeah.
It's just things grew up so fast in China. And, you know, sometimes the rules catch up with the con man a little bit late. So that's what happened. Yeah.
Mm. Well, I suppose it's similar in when you're vetting a new supplier. You need to sort of think about implementing the same kind of vetting process when you're looking at a Chinese lab. Maybe not as in depth, because the lab is only supposed to be doing one kind of thing for you. But you know, you've got to go into it sensibly and consider what are the ramifications of choosing the wrong option?
Right, right. Yeah, because, you know, the price might be 30-40% lower. Mm. So it's quite attractive. And some of these labs, including those that say, yeah, yeah, whatever, you know, they have all brand new equipment. It's amazing, you know. So you visit and you're like, whoa, this is great, you know. And a lot of them have maybe get an investment from the government, maybe directly, maybe one of the branches of the government, such as the customs and so on. Some of them through universities. They are flush with cash, some of them. And some of them, again, do a very good job. Some of them may be questionable. It tends to be, of course, private labs tend to be more reckless. They tend to be the ones that I would worry about. But, you know, I leave it to buyers to make up their mind about that.
Sure, sure. Well, I'll try and add a couple of the links to the lists of labs that you've spoken about in the show notes, and then everyone can have a look at that in their own time, I guess. So moving on, and maybe this is a little bit of a difficult question to sort of answer very briefly. In general, how do buyers know what kind of testing and certifications are going to be applicable to them?
Hmm. Well, first, there are ways to either subscribe or buy credits to databases, to have access to databases. For example, our friends from China Importer recently launched Compliance Gate. We can put the link in the show notes. And for a lot of common consumer goods, they will tell you, you know, they will ask a few questions. Is it for kids? Is it, you know, is it electrical, blah, blah, blah. And based on that, and you know, what kind of product is it, and what countries are you going to sell it into? That's really, really important. Then based on all that, they will give you a list, right? That's a starting point. It's not a bad starting point. In the EU, there's also a company called ProductIP, productip.com. You can buy credits from them, and they will give you a lot of details, even country by country, which is, in some cases, it goes very deep, right? Interface is a little bit old-fashioned, and it's not really a recent design, I would say, but it's some of the information is quite solid, right? So that's one way. Another way is simply to ask testing labs for quotations. Mm. And, you know, a lot of buyers have made this experience is that they have a certain product and they send exactly the same information to 5 testing labs, and then they have 5 versions of the truth. A friend of mine told me, yeah, this is not, you know, everything is kind of true. It's just different interpretations of the regulations. It's just 5 versions of the truth. So, if it's a very, very simple product, very, very mainstream, and the regulations are very, very clear, then it's going to be very, you know, what the labs are going to tell you is going to be very similar. Oh, you need this. And if you push them, they will say, okay, this are must do, and this are nice to have, right? Mm. So if you're really on a budget, you do in priority the ones that are really must do. And different labs will give you different lists of tests to do, you know, related to different compliance regulations or different standards. But if your product is in a, let's say, a universe that is, you know, with some room for interpretation, you might have 5 different labs giving you 5 different lists. And then you're like, whoa, what's that? You know, and it's really each of these labs, especially the big multinational ones, they have teams, you know, who really get familiar with the standards. I mean, some of them, they have some of their staff involved in development of the standards. So some of them are really, really up to date on what is behind the standard. But for some reason, When I give you a quotation, I tell you for this product that you're going to sell into the EU and USA, okay, here's the list. Their interpretations are different. So that's just, you know, part of the nuances in, you know, it's not all black and white. Some, you know, a lot of buyers have gotten used to it and are sort of comfortable with, you know, this kind of risk. Beginners are really, you know, pulling their hair off sometimes. Mm. And what they end up doing is to have low risk, and they go for you know, the longest list just to make sure they're on the safe side. But all of that is money, costs money, right? Yeah, what I always say is think in terms of risk. Think in terms of super high risk, medium risk, let's say, right? Which ones are super important? You're going to maybe have to check them on every single batch. Which ones are much less risky? Well, you know, you're going to do it maybe on the first batch, then, you know, do it at a certain period with a random element, right? That's really the way to rank order them, if I may say, and to prioritize them.
Mm. And so if you are down the line going to be regularly checking production batches for, you know, something which is perhaps the largest risk, so maybe it's something to do with, you know, how the battery connects to the device or something like that, as an example. Is this something that you would, if you've got ongoing auditing going on of your supplier, would you instruct auditors to focus on this kind of point testing is even done?
Well, so if you do auditing before working with that manufacturer, you really want to check if they know, you know, if they're familiar with the standards in your country, if they have the testing equipment in-house, at least to do some of the tests. Because some of the tests, you know, correspond to very high risks. Maybe you want to work with a manufacturer that does 100% testing on all of their production for such and such tests. Right? And it's really common in certain product categories. So yeah, you were talking about batteries. I mean, all batteries are tested 100% in a lot of battery manufacturers for certain things, right? Usually it doesn't go very much in depth, but at least there's some testing going on. And if you really know your product, you're going to instruct auditors to check very specifically at certain elements, right? But we don't see that very often. Not many companies are really familiar with that. But at least, you know, how they, where they source their components from, because that is so, so, so important in many cases. Mm. If they do a bad job at that, that introduces so much risk, so much variability. It's really frightening, right? Now, let's say you work with a manufacturer, they keep producing for you, and you have you send an auditor, you know, a certain time in interval. Well, if you have a deal with the manufacturer that they're going to do some testing, of course your auditor is going to check that they really do the testing, right? And they keep proper records, and they give you the proper records. And that they still have someone who is competent at doing this kind of testing, and that they have the right equipment, and that equipment itself is calibrated or verified, you know, as it should, and da-di-da-di-da-da-da. I mean, it's it's basically process auditing, as we were discussing in a previous episode.
Yeah,
it can also be done on their compliance testing and their reliability testing done in-house.
Good. Okay. And when we were speaking about getting quotations from testing labs a couple of minutes back, so just going back to that for a moment, if you're asking a testing lab for a quotation, what are they likely to ask you to provide them with as a buyer? You know, what sort of list of information are you going to need to get ready?
You know, they're going to want to understand what kind of product is it, what country or countries is it going to be sold into, right? And then with these two things already, they can, they know roughly, you know, they have sort of a matrix and they say, okay, is this going to cut product in this country is going to be, you know, these directives, if it's the EU, these propositions, laws, whatever, if it's the US. Okay. And then usually they will ask for what kind of materials is it made of? Can we see a photo to really understand what it is? Maybe how does it work? You know, is there an instruction manual? And then if they have a doubt, you know, is this going to be used by kids? Things like that, things of that nature. And this, of course, is product specific. It will be quite different for a pair of shoes versus a battery charger, right?
Hmm. Good. Okay. So that's a good look at compliance testing today. And I think now, having gone into it in quite some depth, I think it's quite clear that it's first of all very important, but also it could be easy to get tripped up on certain things if you're not very careful. And I suppose you would agree, Renaud, that ultimately as an importer who's buying something from Chinese suppliers, say, you're responsible for what you're bringing into the country. And if something does go wrong, it's not going to be on them, is it?
Right. Well, except if you have a very well drafted agreement, you know, lawyers can help you with that. However, in most cases, most importers, anyway, you know, if their brand is tarnished, if they have to make a recall, I mean, it's, you know, they might just go under, right? Mm-hmm. And the supplier, from what I've seen in most cases, just, you know, doesn't really pay the price anyway. So you need to be careful about that, and which is why I always, you know, point to the risks. You know, is if your supplier says this testing lab is good, you know, are you going to trust them? I would certainly hope you don't. If your supplier says I'm going to send samples to your lab, I would suggest you don't let them do that. If your supplier says, oh, but look, we have this certificate, and you look at it, it's not even a certificate, maybe not from the same product, not, you know, maybe from 3 years ago, I would suggest you say this is not good enough. This is not applicable. We need to do something new here, right? There's a lot of things. I'm sure I forget some of them. But really, certification can be used for marketing your product. Because if you have ABC Manufacturing in Shenzhen making, you know, Bluetooth speakers for you, you want us to get their product certified, it can be their product. You know, maybe you just slap your logo on it. But the certification, if you pay for it, should have your name on it, right? And then you can show it around to your own customers to provide confidence. Mm. And it's your name on it, right? And obviously, if you switch to another ODM manufacturer and they have their own product, and again, you slap your logo on it, you should not use the same certificate as before, because really the product is different. Then you have to do the same process all over again, which means, of course, the supplier is happy when you invest into a certification of their product, because it means you're ready to stick around with them, and it should help with sales and everything, and they don't have to pay anything. So, I mean, it's all bonus for the supplier, but you need to take the process in your hands, and it can help with marketing, right? So that, I think that's a good final word here. It's not about risk. It can be used also to provide confidence to your customers.
That's really, really good. That's a great summary to top it all off. So thanks very much for joining me and going into compliance testing. Really good. Thanks.
Thanks.
Thanks for joining us. If you've enjoyed today's podcast, don't forget to like and share. And you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all other places that you get your podcasts from. See you next time.